The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Amongst the mitzvahs in Parashas Shoftim is the mitzvah of Minui Melech, the appointment of the king, and certain other mitzvahs pertaining to the king. In Dvorim Yud Zayin, near the beginning of the Sedra, Posuk Yud Dalet, Ki Sovaya Loretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Nesen Loch, when you will come to the land which Hashem, your God, will give to you, V'irishto V'ishavta Bo, and you will inherit it, and you will settle there, V'amarton you shall say, Osimo Alay Melech Kechol HaGoyim Asher Svivosai. Let us appoint for ourselves, upon ourselves, a king like all of the nations which are in our surroundings. Same tosim alecho melech. So you shall appoint for yourself a king, asher yivchar Hashem alekecho boi, which Hashem will choose. Mikerev achecho tosim alecho melech. He shall be from amidst your brethren. Leisucha lo seis alecho ish nochri. You cannot appoint a person who is a stranger over you, asher leachichohu, was not from your brethren. Rak lo yarbe leisusim, lo yoshiv es omitz raimo. He shall not have too many horses, and he shall not return the nation to Egypt. Leman harbe sus, in order to bring more horses, because that's the places. That was the place where the horses were bred. Bashem omar lohem leisusifun loshuv baderech hazeid. Because Hashem has said that you shall not return to that land anymore. And he shall not have for himself too many wives, in order that his heart shall not be turned. And he shall not have too much silver and gold. And when he sits on the throne of his empire, he shall write a sefer, the sefer Torah, lifnei akayanim balavim, alavim, from the kohanim and the levim, vohesi imai, and this sefer Torah shall be with him, vokorevei kol yemei chayov, he shall read from it all of the days of his life, leman yilmad liyiru es Hashem lakov, in order to learn how to fear Hashem, lishmor es kol divrei haTorah azeis, to guard all of the words of this Torah, ves hachukim ha'ilah la'aseiso, and all of the statutes to do them. Levilti rum levove me'achov, in order that his heart shall not be raised above his brothers, he shall not become arrogant, levilti surim min ha'mitzvah yomin u'smol, he shall not turn from the mitzvah to the right or to the left, leman yarich yomim al mamlachtei hu uvona bekerv Yisrael, in order that he shall have many days on his throne, with his kingship, he and his sons, bekerv Yisrael, in the midst of Yisrael. So this is the parsha of Melech, of the appointment and of a king over us in Israel. Today, the concept of a king is something which is very strange to us, and something which we have difficulty understanding, because the Western world has gone away from the concept of monarchy, of a sovereign. And the Western world basically is governed by what is known as a democratic system. Rightly so, the Western world has rejected monarchy, because of some unpleasant historical experiences. The history has repeated itself over and over, that all of the monarchies, at least many, almost all without exception, that rose up throughout the world, became corrupt, were exploited, people were exploited, until eventually it caused an eruption, a revolution. And therefore it was not a very good way of ruling. However, as we see from this parsha, the Torah does not reject monarchy. The Torah holds the ideal system for Klal Yisrael is having a king. And the king was given very great powers. There were limitations also. Now this evening, let's spend a little time going into learning a little about the monarchy of Klal Yisrael. And perhaps we will be able to understand this concept a little better. Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, Perek Aleph, first tells us of the various mitzvahs of Minui HaMelech, to appoint a Melech. Firstly, he tells us it's a mitzvah's essay, one of the Tayag mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, to appoint a king. And this is learned from the Posuk in Ar Parsha, which we just read, which states, Sein Tosim Olecho Melech, that you shall appoint a king over you. And this mitzvah, when is it valid? When is it relevant? So it states, Kisoloi ala oretz, when you come into Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam brings here, from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that when we come into Eretz Yisrael, we were commanded in three mitzvahs. Shleish mitzvahs nitzavi Yisrael bishas kinisos and oretz. One mitzvah was to appoint a king over ourselves. Another mitzvah is to destroy the seed of Amalek. And a third mitzvah is Livnei's Beis HaBachira, to build the Beis HaMikdosh. In what order shall we fulfill these? So Minui Melech Kedem. The first of the three mitzvahs is to appoint a king. Then there's the mitzvah of fighting the war against Amalek, because in the Parsha which deals with Amalek, there it mentions Malchus, there it mentions Kisei, a throne. So from there we learn that that mitzvah of destroying Amalek is only when we have a throne. So let's wait 1 minute until the lights come back on. Then, the third mitzvah, after the destruction of Amalek, is to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash can only be rebuilt when Amalek does not exist anymore. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that his name is not complete, and his throne is not won, as long as Amalek is in the world. And Amalek cannot be... The war against Amalek cannot be successful without a king. So therefore, on these three mitzvahs that we were commanded when we came into Eretz Yisrael, first, the same Tosim Olecho Melech, appoint a king. Secondly, he must lead a war against Amalek. And then the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. What was the way in which the king was appointed? In Mamidin Melech Betchila Alpi Bezdin Shal Shivim Zkenim Alpi Novi. The king was originally appointed through the Sanhedrin, the great court of 70 elders, and a Novi and a prophet. Like we find Ki Yeshua Sheminu Meisha Rabbeinu Bezdina. Now Meisha Rabbeinu was the first king that we had after Klal Yisrael became a nation. The second king we had was Yeshua. Torah tells us that when Meisha appointed Yeshua, he coronated Yeshua. That was only through the high court of 70 elders and Meisha Rabbeinu. And like Shaul v'David, Sheminam Shmuel Haramosi, Ubezdina. Shaul, King Saul, and David, King David, they also were appointed in this manner through a Sanhedrin, a full Sanhedrin and 70 elders, and through a Novi, through a Melech, through a prophet, which was Shmuel. when we would appoint a king, we would take oil, a certain oil which was in the Beis Hamikdash, which was the oil from olives, and it was Kodesh, it was sanctified. And it was the Shemen Zayis, it was from olives, it was Shemen Amishko, which was used also to anoint the Kelim, everything in the Beis Hamikdash. And the king was anointed with this oil. Once he was anointed with this oil, then Hamalchus Yerusha, kingship, royalty, is something which can be inherited. Once he was anointed, and he was thereby officially coronated, then his malchus, his kingship, would be bequeathed to his children. See, as we read in the Posuk, it states, Leman Yarich Yomim HaMamlach Tehu Uvonim Bekerev Yisrael, in order that he should have long days in his throne, he and his children. So malchus is something which is a Yerusha, which is an inheritance. Incidentally, the Rambam writes here, "Vele amalchus bilvad el kol asroris v'chol amenuin shebiyisrael Yerusha livnoi uleven bnei ad olam." Not only was kingship an inheritance to the children, but all of the sroros and all of the menuin, all of the public appointments, all of the honors, the honorable appointments, which we have, went also with inheritance. Once someone was zeicher in it, it remained his, and it went into family with the regular seder ha-yerusha, with the regular order of inheritance, until for some reason it left that family. This was on a condition, though, that the one who inherited was capable of filling his father's place. It would generally go to the oldest son. If the oldest son was not capable, then it went to another son, or it went to a grandson. But it had to be someone who was capable of filling his father's place. And it also had to be someone who was kosher, an ish kosher, an upright person, someone who fulfilled the mitzvahs of the Torah, and was a Yerushalayim, someone who feared heaven. Another halacha was kiven shenimshach David zocher bekesef malchus v'harei malchus leil avone v'azochorim ad olam. Once David was anointed, then the malchus, the royalty, was given to him forever, him and his children. Before it wasn't possible; it could have gone to other people, like we see that Yeshua was a melech, even though he wasn't from the family of David. Meshe was a melech, even though he was not from his family. Shaul, King Saul, was, even though he was not from his family. But once David, King David, was anointed, then it went, it was promised to him forever, with to him and his children. As it states, there's a Kodesh Baruch who said that the Malucha will never be cut from the Zovid, from the seed of David forever. Now this does not mean, though, that no one else can be a king in Israel for a temporary time. Novi Shehemi Melech Mishar Shifti Israel. What would happen if a prophet would come along and he would appoint a king? Let's say there was no king at that time from the house of David, and he would appoint a king from another tribe, not from the family of David. And this king would walk in the way of Torah and mitzvahs, and he would fight the wars of Hashem. Then he would become, this person would be a king. And all of the mitzvahs of royalty that we are commanded in would be relevant. But still, that, and this we see, has taken place in history. But that malchus, that kingship, would last only temporarily. It could last for a generation or a few generations, but it will not last forever. Only to David was promised that kisacho yanocha in ad olam, that your throne will last forever in Klal Yisrael. But by other kings, Tiposei ka malchus mi beisoi, eventually the malchus would cease in their household. Incidentally, when a son would inherit the royalty, then it was not necessary to re-anoint him with the oil. That was only when we made the kingship to begin with in his family. Except if there was people who were challenging the validity of the Malchus, then they would anoint him mipnei machlekes in order to dispose of the challenges. But basically, it was not called for. It was not necessary. And this gives us a few ideas into how the king was appointed. What were the powers of the king? Was he given strong powers? Was he a monarch in the way we understand what a monarch is? Or maybe he was just a figurehead, like today in the world we do have a few kings left, a few royal families left, but they are merely figureheads. The answer is the king was very, very powerful. Very powerful. The Torah gave him a great authority. Let's mention a few. The Rambam brings this in Perek Dalet. Firstly, in regards to taxes. Rishush yesh lemelech liten mas al ha'om letzorcha vay letzorcha al milchomis. The king has unilateral power tax the people, either if it's for his own personal needs or the needs of his wars or the needs of the community of the nation. And once he establishes these taxes, then we are not allowed to avoid or evade these taxes. We have to pay it, and he can levy very, very heavy penalties for people who do not pay the taxes. He had the power of conscription. Shaleach b'chol gvul Yisrael v'lekeach min ha'am ha'giborim v'yam shechayel. He could send his ambassadors or his emissaries or those that represented him throughout the entire land to look for people that could serve him in the army, that were good warriors, and he could draft them. And he could bring them to his service in his armies, or for his personal needs, in his cities, in his palace. And he could take them also and use them for various types of work. This power of conscription. Naturally, he would pay them for their services, and he would have to treat them well. But this was a power that was given the king. He also could take bale umnias, kol ma shehu tzorich, the eisin le malachton, the eisin schor. That if he needed work done, any type of work that he needed done, he could send out and conscript tradesmen or professionals or other types of artisans to do work for him. And they would have to do it. He would pay them for it, but they would have to do it. They would have to work in his service. He could also conscript, or what we might call nationalize, their possessions. Like many times we see that an army will conscript the trucks or automobiles or other things of the people. He had their power. He could take their animals, their servants, their maidservants, and bring them into his service, but he'd have to pay the people for it. But this he had the authority, the right to do. He also had the right to take the fields of the people. If he needed fields, or if he needed vineyards, if he needed olive groves, he could take these fields and pay the people, buy it off of the people. He also had the right to demand a percentage of the crops, or the percentage of the crops, or of the fruits of the trees, also as a duty to the king. By the Melech HaMashiach, who will be the king when the next king from the house of David, there was a special halacha that when he would go to war and they would capture lands, these lands would be divided up between the 12 Shvatim, the 12 tribes. Everyone would get a 12th. It would be divided up into 13 parts. And he would get one share. 1/13 would go to the Melech HaMashiach for his own use. In regards to spoils, if there was someone who was condemned to death by the king, which he had certain rights, which we'll see in a minute, to do, then the possessions of that man automatically went to the king. If the king went to war and the war was successful, Eitzreis HaMalochim LaMelech, the treasure houses, the personal treasure houses of the foreign kings that they fought against, that automatically became the Bizur Yamelech, the spoils for the king. And then Shar HaBizur and all of the other spoils was Natal Mechsabaresh. The first half the king would take, and then the second half was divided amongst the rest of the people, or the rest of the soldiers, or all of those who helped in the war effort. If the king would go to war to conquer more land, Kolo'oret Shekevi Shareu Shalei, this land would become his. V'neisin La'avodah V'la'anshei Melchoma Kefi Mashi Yetzeh. And he could give it out the way he saw fit. He would give to who he saw fit to, and he would keep for himself, retain for himself who he saw fit, what in accordance to the way he saw fit. So we see that the king was given great authority, great power when it came to levying taxes or demanding duty or conscription, nationalization, or dividing the spoils for more efforts. At the end of Perek Gimel, Halacha Ches, the Rambam brings another halacha, which shows us the greatness of the power of the king. Kol ha-meirin b'melech Yisrael, yesh l'melech rishus l'horgei. If someone challenges the king's authority and refuses to listen to him, so the king has permission to kill him. This is Amarid Bebelchus, Malchus. We see that he had the power of an absolute monarch in this manner. He did not have to kill him, but Yeshle Rishus, he had permission to kill him. Afil gozar alechon mishara om, shiyelech lemokim dleini veleholach. Even if he will decree on one of the people of the nation that they should go to a certain place and the person refuses to go, or that he should not go and he does go, then that person is guilty of capital punishment. And if the king wants to kill him, he has permission to. As it states, that anyone who rebels against the king, if someone disgraces the king or insults the king also has permission to kill him. Shimi ben Gera, this we see with Shimi ben Gera and David. Or in the first case we saw with when David sent the Uriah, who was the husband of Bathsheba, to the front lines, where it was almost for certain that he would be killed in battle. that also was because he did not listen to his command. He gave him a command to stay home and not to go fight, and he went back to the army, so he was chayv miso. He was guilty of the capital punishment. And the king has the right to order corporal punishment if he sees necessary, in order to strengthen his position in the nation. Most of these powers are learned from a perek in Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph, perek Ches. Where the people came to Shmuel states, Vayikasher zokein Shmuel, Vayosem es bonav shaftim l'Israel. When Shmuel became old, this was before the time of kings. After Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, until Shmuel's time, there was no king. And the nations were ruled by shaftim, by judges, or by the Nevi'im, by the prophets. And when Shmuel, who was a prophet, became old, Vayosem es bonav shaftim l'Yisrael, and he appointed his sons as judges, Vayeholchu bonav bedrochav, and his sons did not walk in the way of Shmuel, Vayitu acharei abotza, and they became corrupt, and they went after gain. So the elders, all of the elders of Israel came. They came to Shmuel. And they said, you are getting old. Your children are not walking in your ways. What will happen after you die will be left to the mercy of your children. So therefore appoint for us a king, and he will judge us like all of the nations. And it was very hard in the eyes of Shmuel that they asked for the king. And Shmuel went to Hashem. And Hashem said, listen to what they are saying, because they are not despising you, but they are despising me. Now here there's a question, which we will speak about soon, that what was the problem here? If it's a mitzvah essay, a positive commandment that you should appoint a king, so why didn't Shmuel want to appoint a king for them? And why was HaKadosh Baruch Hu also upset with this? But at any rate, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Shmuel, if they want a king, appoint one. But igarot lehem mishpar hamelech hashim lech aleihem. But tell them first, what is the mishpar hamelech? What are the laws? What is the authority of the king? Maybe when they hear what the authority of the king is, they won't be so anxious to have one. So Shmuel told them all of this. Shmuel said, and he said, you're asking for me a king. This is the authority of the king. As b'neichem yikoch, b'somlei b'merkaftoi, u'v'roshov, v'rotzalif neim merkaftoi. He will take your sons, and he will use them in his great chariots, and they will run before his chariots. And he will make them heads of thousands and heads of fifties. And he will use them to plow and to harvest and to go and to take care of all of the weapons and so forth. And your daughters will be taken. And they will be used for cooking and for baking. And his fields, your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves he will take. And he will give them to his servants. And he will take a tenth of all of your crops. And your servants and your maidservants he will take. And your young men he will take for his work. And your sheep, a tenth of your sheep he will take. And you will come and you will cry to us, why have you appointed a king over us? So this is what Shmuel told them, in order to try to perhaps divert them from wanting a king. But still they wanted, they said no. Vayimonu ha'om lishmeh b'kol shmul v'yimra leiki melech yel aleinu. Says no, we want a king. Vayinu gam anachnu k'chol ha'goyim. That we should be like the other nations. Ushvotonu malkeinu v'yotze lefaneinu v'milcham es milcham esenu. And he will judge us and he will go before us and he will fight our wars for us. So in that case, Shmuel said, all right. And that led to the appointment of Shaul HaMelech. From these psukim, where we see what Shmuel said would be the Mishpat HaMelech, the laws of the king, from here we learn out all of these authorities, which we have just quoted. All of these authorities and these powers, which we quoted. In regards to the question, why did Shmuel want to appoint a king? And that is given two answers. The Rambam brings here in Perek Aleph. Me'achri sha'akom es melech mitzvah. Since the appointment of a king is a mitzvah, lo melo rotza ha'korish borchu kishishol melech mishmul. So why didn't Hashem want to make a king when they asked from Shmuel? Lefi shishol b'tarumas. It was the way they asked. They asked because of complaint. They didn't come to ask for a king to fulfill the mitzvah that we should have a king. They were tired of Shmuel. They were tired of his government. And they wanted someone else. So that's why they came to ask for a king. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset with them. As he says, Ki le'oschu mo'asu ki eisi mo'asu. That's one answer. Another answer is also given. And that is, if you notice, they didn't say they wanted a king in order that we should have a king. But they said, that they wanted a king, l'shafteinu kechol ha'goyim. Appoint for us a king that will judge us like all of the other nations. They said that twice. After Shmuel warned them, again they said, "V'hayinu gam anachnu kechol ha'goyim." Why should we be different than all of the other nations? At that time, all of the nations were monarchies. So why should we be different? And this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very angry, because the purpose of us having a king is not at all similar to the monarchies of the world, as we will see soon. But they wanted a king, the Shofteinu Kechol HaGoyim, that we will be like all of the other nations. Now this is in regards now to the authority and the powers of the king. We are obligated to give great honor to the king, and he was also obligated to maintain this honor, to maintain his own personal honor, the honor of the king, the honor of the royalty, and the beauty, and the aristocracy of the malchus of the kingship. To give us a few ideas of this, we'll quote a few halachos from the Rambam and Perek Beis. Kovet godl neagin b'melech. We are obligated to give great honor to the king. Umesimin le'ema v'yire b'leiv kol odom. And he's obligated to make sure that the fear and trepidation of the king is in the hearts of all people. As it states, same tosim, you shall appoint shetei emosei olecho, a king that you will fear. Because of this, there are many halachas. In Rechvin al Susa, you were never allowed to ride on the horse that the king rode on. In Yeshvin al Kisrei, never allowed to sit in his throne. Ein mishtamshin b'sharbitei, we're never allowed to use his scepter. V'lei b'kisrei, and we're not allowed to use his crown. V'lei b'echol mikol kli tashmisho, we're not allowed to use any of his personal possessions. So what happens then if he dies? This is different than other monarchies. Usually if he dies, it's inherited. If he dies, kulin nisrofin l'fonof, then all of his personal belongings, anything that he used, is burnt. So they would not be used by anyone else. Ishtei shel melech. The wife of the king is never allowed to marry another man. Afilo hamelech einaneisei almanosei o grushosei shel melech acher. Even a king, another king, is not allowed to marry his almona, his widow, or grusha, or his divorcee of another king. Also, l'raisi kishu orim, v'lei kishu mishtaper. You're not allowed to see the king when he's without clothing, or if he's taking a haircut, or if he's in the Beis HaMerechetz, in the bathhouse, and so forth. And even if he allows one to do so, ein shemilei, and all of these things, we don't listen. Shahamelech shemocha al kfeidei, ein kfeidei mochot. A king which waives his honor, his honor is not waived. The deen is that by other appointments, a Talmud Chochem shemochal akfeidei kfeidei mochal, if a Talmud Chochem waives his honor, the honor is waived. Or even an Osi, the head of the Sanhedrin. But a king that waives his honor is not waived. Because it states, same tosimo lecho, we are obligated to see that we fear him all the time. Therefore, he cannot waive his honor. Amelech mistaper b'chol yeim. The king was obligated to take a haircut every day. Every day. U'mesaken atzmoi u'misnoye b'malmushov noyim u'forim. He was obligated to dress perfectly with great beauty, with aristocratic clothing of royalty. Shnemar, as it states, melech b'yofyov sechezeno einecho. That a king you shall see, your eyes shall gaze at in his beauty. With royalty goes beauty and luster, and the king was obligated to uphold that. Yeshev al kisei malchusei bepaltrin shalei. And he would sit on the throne in his palace, umesim kesev reishei, and with a crown on his head. V'chol ha'am boin elov beish yitze. The whole nation would come to him when he wanted. V'aimnim lefonov, and they would stand before him, umishtachvi malso, and they would bow down to the ground. Afilu novi aimid lifnei ha'melech mishtachvi malso. Even when the prophet would come, the prophet also would stand up and bow to him. As it states, when Nosan HaNovi came to the king, he bowed down. Then it brings that the king privately, when it would come to Talmidei Chachomim or others, he would relax with them and relax the protocol, and he would makarav them and bring them close and so forth. But that's when he was alone. Bitsino. Abul Befarheshu bifnei am layase. But Befarheshu, when he was in public, the king never stood up for anyone. Privately, there was something else. But public, he would never stand up before anyone. And he could never speak informally to anyone. But he could Lord Mel Bishmay. And he was only allowed to call everyone by his proper name publicly. Couldn't call him in an informal manner. In order that the fear and the honor of the king should be in the hearts of everyone. This was an obligation on the king to uphold the honor of the throne. Could you maybe open the door? It's very hot in here. Now this gives us an idea of how a king was appointed, the powers of the king, and the kovod ha-malchus, the honor and the dignity of the throne. Now it would seem from here that he was almost an absolute monarch. He was given extraordinary powers. What made him different than any other monarch in the world? Why is this such an ideal system of government? And as we mentioned, history teaches us that monarchy is something which was bankrupt always throughout the ages. So one would seem that this is not the perfect system. See? We'll go a little further. Every Jew was commanded in mitzvahs. The king also was commanded in all of the mitzvahs that every Jew was commanded in. Plus, he was given extra mitzvahs. He was given 3 extra negative commandments and a positive commandment. As it states in our Sedra. One command is Layarbe Leinoshim. He's not allowed to have too many wives. Layarbe Leisusim. He's not allowed to have too many horses. Layarbe Leikesev Ezov. He's not allowed to have too much silver and gold. And Kesev Leisefer Torah Leatzmai. He had to write a Sefer Torah for himself. These are all mitzvahs that are not commanded to the rest of the Israel. Any Jew, according to the Torah, we don't practice it now, but according to the Torah, was allowed to have as many wives as he wanted. Any Jew, according to the Torah, could have as many horses as he wanted. No prohibition of horses. We're not allowed to eat horses, but to raise horses, to ride horses, breed horses, any Jew is allowed to. When it comes to silver and gold, we don't find any limitation in the Torah of how much a Jew could own. In Russia, there's limitations how much a Jew or how much anyone can own. This we don't find in the Torah. As long as it became yours legally, and as long as the Torah frowned upon those who spent an entire life chasing gold and silver, but if it would come your way without spending an entire life on it, then more power to you. If it was 1 million or 1 billion or 10 billion, no limitations. A king, there was a limitation as to how much gold and silver he could own. When it comes to a Sefer Torah, every Jew was commanded to write a Sefer Torah. This is a mitzvah on every Jew. Kislochem es Ashir Azreis. It's a mitzvah in a parsha that we'll be reading soon. It's a mitzvah we don't find practiced much today for various reasons. But one of the 613 mitzvahs is every Jew was obligated to write a Sefer Torah for himself. The king was obligated to write 2 Sefer Torah. One, because he was like every other Jew. And 2, because he was the king. Now, let's spend a minute or two in regards to these mitzvahs. Lo yarve leinoshim, he shouldn't have too many wives. So a limited amount of the amount is given in the Torah of how many wives he can have. Im heisi vachas leikev. If he would marry one more wife than he's allowed to, like it, he would be chayv malchus. He would be guilty and sentenced to corporal punishment. V'yesh legarish. And he would have to send away that wife. Why wasn't he allowed to marry too many wives? So the Torah tells us in our parsha, Lo Yosu Levavai, because they will turn his heart away. Lo Yarve Leisusim, he was not allowed to have too many horses. So how many horses was he allowed to have? Kidei Makafte, enough to ride on. This was his means of transport. One perhaps could ask, with a modern king, how many cars was he allowed to have? This was a means of transport. So if he would ride on one horse, then he was allowed to have one horse. If he rode a chariot that was drawn by two horses or four horses, then he was allowed to have two horses or four horses. But outside of that, he was not allowed to have any horses. Afilu sus echod ponui li yisrotz lefonav kiderek shoyis in sharam lochim also. Even one extra horse, he was not allowed to have. Now, it was the ways of the kings that when they would ride, they would have a lot of horses just riding in front of the chariot that actually was not pulling the chariot. This he was not allowed to have. And the Gemara says, sus batlonim, horses that were not, did not work. This he was not allowed to have. Some horses to run in front of him, or to breed horses for sport. Even one horse, extra horse, he was not allowed. And if he did, he meisiv leiker. If he did, he transgressed the negative commandment, and he would be chayev, he would be guilty of the corporal punishment. Now here we get beginning to see that our monarch was a little different than other monarchs. When it came to the world monarchs, the famous kings of Germany, of France, of England, or the Roman Caesars or the Russian Tsars, Austria, or the sheikhs of Arabia, or whatever it might be, they had great harems. This the king was not allowed. They were tremendously involved in personal pleasure with their horses, and they were tremendously involved in sport. Much of their time and their energies went into this, with their horses and so forth. This the king wasn't allowed. The chinuch brings a reason. Torah says one reason is that he shouldn't bring the nation back to Egypt, become too involved in the horses where they bred horses. The chinuch also mentions that because his head shouldn't be in these things. He had more important things to think about. When it comes to gold and silver, he was not allowed to have too much gold or silver. Just enough to keep up the honor of the king. To give his armies, to give his servants, to pay all of his accounts in taking care of the palace and everything else. But more than that, he was not allowed to have. To store away personal treasures of great amount, he wasn't allowed. Kol kesev izov shiyar b'leitzer beis Hashem liyosham muchen l'tzorchei atzibur ulemelchom asei marei ze mitzvah l'arboisri. Gold and silver that he stored away for the needs of the nation, that was a mitzvah. Bein osa ela harbeis le'atzmei bebeis genozov shenem le'yar b'lei. The prohibition was only that he should not accumulate great treasures for himself personally. To accumulate wealth for the nation, that was a mitzvah. But to accumulate treasures for himself personally, this was forbidden. So these are the three negative commandments which the king was commanded. The positive commandment of writing a Sefer Torah, Be'ish Yoshev HaMelech Al Kisei Malchusei, when a king sat on his throne, Kesev Le Sefer Torah La'atzmei Yeser Al HaSefer Shinich Le Avisov. He writes a Sefer Torah for himself, besides the one that he'll inherit. And this Sefer Torah, it states in our Sedra, it should be through the Levim, Kahanim Levim. This Sefer Torah, he wrote from the Sefer Torah, which was in the Beis Hamikdash. There was a Sefer Torah in the Azor and the Beis Hamikdash. This one was copied from there. Al pi bezdin shel shivim ve'echad, was a full Sanhedrin to make sure that this Sefer Torah was perfect. If he has his own personal Sefer Torah, then he's obligated just writing the second Sefer Torah. If he doesn't have this own personal Sefer Torah, then he's obligated in writing two Sefer Torah. What does he do with two Sefer Torah? One Torah he would leave in his treasure house for safekeeping. That was the one that every Jew had. The second Sefer Torah, which was the special one for the king now, there was another mitzvah. Lo yozuz milfonov. That was not allowed to be lost from him at all. The only time that he would not carry that other Sefer Torah with him is if he would go into a place where one is not allowed to take a Sefer Torah. Otherwise, he always carried it with him. Yetzil Lamochomo, if he would go to war, he would take the Sefer Torah with him. The Gemara brings it was a little Sefer Torah that he would keep chained to his arm. If he would go to war, he went with the Torah. Nichnas Buhu Imoy. When he came into the palace, he came with the Torah. Yeshiv Bedin, if he sat down for judgment, the Torah was with him. Mesiv, when he relaxed and reclined, Buhu Kinegde, the Sefer Torah was with him. That this Torah should be with him and he should read all the days of his life. So these are the four mitzvahs that besides being obligated in all of the mitzvahs of the Torah, he had four extra mitzvahs that only a king is obligated in. Not to have too many wives, too much gold and silver, too many horses, and to write a special Sefer Torah. And that the Sefer Torah should be with him and he should read from it all of the time. Now there are, as we go into this a little more thoroughly, we'll see that there are some other things that a king is also obligated in. For example, the Rambam brings in Perek Gimel, HaMelech Osir Lishteis Derek Shikres. The king is not allowed ever to drink wine Derek Shikres to get drunk. A king was not allowed to get drunk. Here again now we see the lines widening between the monarch of Israel and other monarchs. There was usually parties, great royal banquets. This is something that kings were always at. And they were always getting drunk. We know about Ahasuerus in the Purim story. Made a great party and drank for days and days. Barrels of wine. The king was not allowed, even though he well could afford it, he was not allowed to drink Derek Shikris ever to drink to get drunk. What was he supposed to do? Eli Yaisik Betorah ubetzorche Yisrael b'yoymu b'laylo. He wasn't even allowed to sit at parties or banquets or feasts, but he was obligated to be Isaac either to study Torah or to take care of the needs of the nation day and night, as it states that the Torah shall be with him all the days of his life. The king was not allowed to overindulge with women. This is something that all monarchs did. They were in a position where they could have the most beautiful women in the world. We know from Ahasuerus, so forth, by Purim, and other, the Purim story and others. The king was not allowed to overindulge with women. Even in the women that he was permitted to marry, in the number that he was permitted to marry, he was not allowed to become overindulgent in women. Kishar ha-tipshim, like the other fools, like monarchs who were fools. Al-hasores libay hikpida Torah shenema lo yosil levovri. The Torah was concerned with the losing of his heart. That the king should not lose his heart to women, to horses, to gold, to silver, to shikris, to feasts and festivals. Lo yosir levovei al asoris liboi hikpiru Torah. This is what the Torah was concerned with. This is why the Torah gave extra mitzvahs to the king. Why was the Torah so concerned that he shouldn't lose his heart? Shelibay hu lev kol kahal Yisrael. Because the heart of the king represented all of Israel. A monarchy was not something that was given for personal utilization. It was not something that was given for personal grandeur. Many fools in the world, the tipshim, they became kings. They inherited thrones. They thought it was given to them, this authority was given to them for a personal grandeur, for personal wealth, for personal power. And they used it this way. And therefore was said that absolute monarchy corrupts absolutely. The Torah didn't give the monarch of Israel anything personal. Gold and silver he can amass for the nation, but lo yarbe lei, personally he's not allowed to amass. Grandeur and beauty he's obligated to have, but that's so the people can see the grandeur and the beauty, not for himself, so they can see it, so they'll fear it and honor it. And the king has to realize that he's the Libay Shela'am. He represents the heart of the nation. And therefore, if his heart becomes turned, the entire nation becomes turned. If his heart is turned to horses, the whole nation's heart is turned to horses. If his heart is turned to gold and silver, the entire nation is turned that way. If his heart is turned to women, or to drunkenness, to indulgence, then the entire nation is turned that way. Al hasores liboy hikpiru Torah. The Rambam says even if he has one wife, if his heart is turned away from the Torah, away from the nation to this woman, then he has turned away the heart of the entire nation. Al hasoris libay hikpiru Torah. Shinam ala yosef avavai. Shelibay hu lev kol kahal Yisrael. His heart is the represents the entire nation of Israel. Lefichoch dovku akosev b'teiri yesem yisharam. Shinam akol yimei chayov. Therefore, every Jew has an obligation to learn Torah. The king has a greater obligation to learn Torah. Yesir mikol ha'am. Because every Jew's heart is his personal heart. The king's heart is the nation. Therefore, he's obligated to bring his heart closer to Torah than other Jews, in order that the entire nation will be brought closer to Torah. Another halacha. We mentioned that the king has tremendous authority. If he says, you, I forbid you to go to that place and that person goes, or I command you to go and you don't go, he can put him to death. What happens if his commands conflict with mitzvah HaTorah? Amavatul gzeres hamelech b'fish shilisasik b'mitzvah. What happens if the king commands someone to go somewhere and the person cannot go because he's been asik b'mitzvah, he's doing a mitzvah Hashem? Afilu b'mitzvah kalah, even if it's from the light mitzvahs, harei zeh poter, the king can't do anything to him. Because divrei harav v'divrei eved, divrei harav kaidmin. Because we are obligated to listen to the king. But what happens if the king tells us one way and the king of all kings tells us a different way? Then we must listen to the king of all kings, because the other king is merely his servant. If a master tells you one way and a servant tells you another way, you listen to the master. And certainly if the king stands up and wants to tear out one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, then we're obligated to rebel, not to listen to him. He has absolute powers within the structure of the Torah. But to destroy a mitzvah, to go against the Torah, this he has no power. Another duty of the king. We find many times that even with the best law system and the best government system, there are still many ways to weave in and out of the law. Through technicalities, so forth. For example, you take today in Western cultures, where you have courts and law systems and constitutions and whatnot, and crime is still rampant. With all of the courts and with all of the judges and with all of the policemen and all of the soldiers and all of the armies, crime is still rampant in Western culture. How can it be? It's written very clearly that a man steals, he has to be punished. Yet they say in some places that if you leave your car and you come back, it's a shaili, you might have to bench gemel. The fact that you found your car. It's against the law to steal, yet everybody puts bars on their windows. It's against the law to kill, yet murder is rampant. All types of crimes, theft, killing, rape, everything. And we add more laws and more laws. So evidently, the best law systems, it's still difficult to put a halt to all crime. Take a look at the mafia. One of the biggest problems in the world today is organized crime. It goes into the billions. Organized crime, with drug traffic, with gambling and so forth, into the billions of dollars. And this organized crime are as powerful as governments. And with all of the attorney generals and all of the president's councils, still can't do anything about it. One of the duties of the king was to wipe out crime. To see that no crime exists. And he was given extraordinary powers to go beyond the law to see that no crime existed. If a man murdered, but he murdered in such a way that through a technicality the law couldn't do anything to him. And this is common today in our legal systems of the world, where they can go to courts, battle in the courts for years and frustrate the courts. Justice is constantly frustrated. The legal systems of the world are put in a position where they constantly work against themselves. The criminals receive their greatest protection from our legal systems. There was no legal systems ever developed that gave criminals such protections. It was the king's duty to put a stop to this. No questions asked. If he would see cases where there was mafia, where there were gangsters, powerful people, Rishoyim, who were a threat to decent civilizations, then he was given extraordinary power that even where the courts could not put that person to death, for those people to death, he was obligated to do so. Yesh lemelech reshus lahorgei olasakin ha'elam kifi masha ashot tzricha. The king was given the duty, he was commanded in the duty to kill and to do what's ever necessary, what the time called for, in order to bring justice to the world. V'heire grabim b'yem echot. He could kill many in one day. And he was even allowed, even though this is against the law of the Torah, But he was given extraordinary power. He was even allowed to kill many and hang them and leave them hanging for many days. Lahatil Emo, in order that everyone should see. Imagine what he could do. He could wipe out the mafia in a week. Lishboyad Risha Elam, because it was the king's duty to destroy the strength, to break the back of the Rishoyim, of the evil of the world. So this was another of his duties. Now this that we said, that the king is allowed to take his portion first when it came to the spoils and so forth. But whatever he does, it must be for the name of heaven. His whole direction must be to bring the truth into the world, to bring Torah into the world. Ulamaleisa olam tzedek, to bring righteousness in the world. Ulalishboy zereya reshoim, and to break the strength and the backs of the evil. Ulaylochei milchamei Hashem, and to fight the wars of Hashem. She'ein mamlichin melech tchilo, because the reason why we make a king is lasei spishpot umlochomis, to bring judgment to the world, to bring justice to the world, and to fight the wars of Hashem. As it states, v'shofteinu malkeinu v'yotze lefoneinu v'nilcham es milchamaseinu, that he will come and he will judge us, he will go before us and he will fight our wars. So here also we see what the duty and the obligation of the king was. The Rambam writes in Perek Beis, that just as the Torah gave to the king great authorities and great honor, and everyone must honor him, but so did the Torah command the king that he must be humble. As David HaMelech wrote, V'libi cholol bikirbi, my heart is pure and empty within me. He's not allowed to become arrogant. As it states in our parsha, lebilti rum levove me'achor, to hold himself above his brethren. He must be chaynin umarachim. He must be good and compassionate, lektanim ugdelim, to small and to small people and to great people. V'yotzei v'yetzei v'yovei b'chavtzeihem uv'teivosom. B'chavtzeihem uv'teivosom. He must always concern himself with their needs and their welfare. V'yochais al koved kotin shebiktanim, and he must concern himself with the honor of even the smallest of Israel. When he speaks to Klal Yisrael, he must speak to them softly and in a goodly manner. As it states, he said, Shimu'uni achi v'ami, listen to me, my brethren, my nation. Always he must conduct himself with an extra amount of humility. Who was our first king? Moshe Rabbeinu. And on Moshe said, Nachnu mo, who am I? Who am I? Moshe was the humblest of all people. Yisbol tirchom umasom v'tlunaisom, he must carry their burdens, he must carry their complaints. Just like the mother carries the small child. The Torah calls a king a shepherd. And what is the way of a shepherd? Kireya edroi yire bizroya yekabit stloim ubecheko yisu. What is the way of a shepherd? The shepherd protects all of his sheep. And when his sheep starts to wander away or if a sheep is hurt, then he picks up the sheep in his arms and carries it next to him. This was the obligation of the king. Now, if we ask ourselves the question, which we started the show with, that today we're very far from the concept of monarchy. It's something that our Western world has thrown out, discarded, and rightly so, because all of the monarchies that we've had in the past, they were destructive, they were corrupt. On the other hand, though, a government by democratic society is actually not a government, because the people, that's what is known as self-government, the people are ruling themselves. The whole concept of government is that there should be a power over the people. And we see that that doesn't work so well either. It has no ability to stamp out crime. It comes out that everyone is in for himself. Everyone is in for his personal needs. The chinuch brings in this mitzvah, a mitzvah Tov Tzarek Zayin and a mitzvah Ein Aleph, which deals with kings. He writes that the reason why the Torah selected a king, because it's impossible for two people or more to rule. Tzufil balabatim, too many rulers spoil everything. There has to be one boss. He says when you have more than one ruler, it's impossible that anything will come out of it. There'll always be machlekes, strife. You'll never have a perfect rulership. And this is why the Torah told us to appoint a king. The fact is, he says, he quotes that one of the klolas, the curses that we have, is that many people will rule. And the ultimate, and the direction of the king, was to bring righteousness into the world. To create a standard in the world. You know, the king can create a tremendous standard. He establishes standards. We see historically that there were certain kings or queens that lived with great promiscuity. This went through the entire nation, and the entire moral standard dropped. There were certain kings or queens that lived with a high moral standard, and it uplifted the moral standard of the nation. Even today, where we have no kings or queens, you have with Lady Diana, Princess Diana, that you see what she does sends ripples throughout the world. The way she dresses, what she does. In fact, when she promptly delivered her husband with an heir, so there were many articles written that having children is going to come back into style amongst young people. And this is what the Rambam brought, that the king is the heart of the people. Just like the heart affects the entire body, the king affects the entire people. What an individual does, that might affect him. But what the king does infects the entire party. And this was the system that the Torah chose. It was his obligation, his duty, to promote Kovet Shemayim, the honor of heaven. That through him, we would see what the Melech Malchei HaMelochim, the King of all kings, is. It was his obligation to see that Torah went through the world. Standards went through the world. Anur of heaven went through the world. And all the people would follow him. And that there was justice in the world. The Rishya Ailam, the wicked of the world, were destroyed and broken. That's why the Torah said, when it comes to a regular person, he wants to have as many wives as he wants, let him have. As much gold and silver, let him have. He wants horses, let him have horses. When it comes to the king, his heart had to be only in Torah. Imagine, he would go to meet the monarchs of the world, he would come with his Sefer Torah. He would go to war, he would go with the Sefer Torah. Kol Yomov, all of his days, his obligation was to be Osik B'Torah, to involve himself in the study of the Torah, or the Tzorche Ha'am, the needs of the nation. Anything that he did had to be for the nation. For the nation he could gather as much wealth as he wanted. Lo Yar V'Lei, for him, he was not allowed to. Therefore we must not be misled that because the world would put, like the Rambam calls, a fool in the throne of the monarchy, that it means that a system of monarchy, of Torah monarchy, is not perfect. The system of Torah monarchy, when it was kept, was perfect. Like in the Torah it states that if he will cleave to Torah, then the kingship will last in his family for generations. This gives us some concepts in this mitzvah of Seim Tosim Alecho Melech. It's something that we don't have now, but in Yitz Hashem, when the Melech HaMashiach will come, B'imheira V'yomeinu, we will be zeche again to see Malchus, to see monarchy in its perfection, where he will raise the standard and he will set the standard of Torah and of justice and of morals for the entire world to follow, and then will be fulfilled that prophecy that hu mamlachta, he and his royalty and his kingship will last on his throne for many generations.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.